Wish I could click my fingers properly.
Can't you?
Oh, you're good at that.
Listen to that. Ow! I've broken my finger. Oh, God,
just
Judith. I need a splint.
Oh, it's one thing after another.
I need to be taken to hospital.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Let me go to hospital and lie down. And mind you don't want that anymore. In the old days, I used to sort of fantasise about having a week in hospital just in clean white sheets. But, of course, you don't get clean white sheets anymore, do you? You get blood spattered, old limp, crappy things.
I know what you mean, though. A sort of week away from everything.
Absolutely.
You know, a few magazines.
No, that's what you want. You want. You don't want to be going to China. What have I done with my glasses? They're on top of my head. Here we go. Right. So you haven't told us, you young lady, haven't told us about your French holiday.
Oh, no, I haven't. My second French holiday.
Oh, it's disgusting, isn't it?
It's getting a bit embarrassing, isn't it?
You took the girls.
Yeah, well, that's why we did it, really, because we were offered an audience. We were offered a holiday audience with them. So, you know, you jump at that, don't you?
A whole week.
You jump at that. Yes, a whole week with gorgeous sort of 20 and 30 somethings that, you know, kind of.
Because they each took a friend.
Yes, they did. They took a friend each. And so there were a lot of bikinis and a lot of very
gorgeous. Did you fart in front of any of them?
Not like you did in front of Tristan. No, I didn't.
You didn't? Oh.
No, I didn't.
I farted at your house the other day.
Yeah,
when we were
working. Noticed that twice, for goodness sake.
Couldn't help it.
You need some of those things that you saw advertised at the back of that loo, don't you? The
Shreddies fart pan.
You do, for goodness sake.
We keep putting out a call to Shreddies, don't we?
I know. They, you know, they get a name
deaf ears.
They get a name check most weeks, don't they? And have we heard from them? No,
just,
we have not.
Just making myself comfortable on your carpet.
I noticed.
We were doing our secret squirrel writing project that we think is rather good.
Well, I hope other people agree.
All your produce that you had.
Yes, you did. Yeah. You were very good and you were very
complimentary. And then you gave me a bunch of dahlias to take home.
I know, it's very sweet.
And they survived, Judith. It was a long... Because they had to go...
I did worry.
Your mic had to give me a lift to the train station. Then I got the train to Marylebone. Then I got a tube from Marylebone to the Elephant and Castle. And then I got a bus. And the plucky little dahlias just kept their brave heads bouncing up.
I was impressed because they did look a bit kind of... They looked slightly exhausted by the time
now.
You got to the...
Dead now. So, a good French holiday.
A good French holiday, very nice villa, lovely. Yeah, and the end of the summer, it was the last week of the summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went canoeing with the girls. In fact, they went paddleboarding and we went canoeing. And we were literally the last customers of the season.
Yeah.
My
That's
God, that
a bit like
was
that Cornish week that I had. That was the weather was so perfect and I had an idyllic time.
Yeah, and it wasn't too hot. It was just very lovely and, you know, just sort of autumnal colours and everything. It was lovely to see them. There was an argument, of course. There's always
about?
An argument, isn't there? There's always
what
an argument.
Was it your fault? What did you say?
I think it was my fault.
God. Did you poke your nose in?
I was quite good. I didn't ask too many questions. I was quite, you know, I kind of pulled back on the kind of interrogation front quite well.
Well, you're not allowed. You're only allowed when they give you a ticket.
The vouchers. Yes, I know. Yeah. Yes, vouchers weren't issued, but I, you know, they were kind of unspoken. It was a sort of unspoken voucher situation.
Okay.
I felt. So yeah, I did a bit of a mic. You know, sort of held back. Didn't ask too many things. And there was some information that was forthcoming here and there, just little snippets. But no, we were talking about Sienna's move. And I think you know, sometimes, I don't know whether you do this, but there was something that Sienna said that made me feel excluded. And I think, you know, like, you don't need to come to London, Mum. You know, we don't need you. We're fine as we are. And then I went into that sort of ridiculous, oh, what do you mean? Oh, that's okay then. Oh, so you don't need me then. Oh, so I'm all right to do that, but you don't need me on removal day. Well, that's okay. No, that's fine, you know.
She doesn't want you on removal day. Is that what she actually said?
Well, she did, really, yes. I think, do you know what? I think because I can be, well, quite bossy.
Yeah, well,
do you know what I mean?
Don't go.
Yeah, and having made it, having done the massive flounce, quite a big sort of flounce, you know, as a result of this.
A teary flounce.
Shouty flounce, I'm afraid, yes.
In front of the friends.
Well, they weren't actually in the room, but I'm sure they heard it. Funnily enough, I have now started to think, well, actually, do I need to go to London for the move?
No,
maybe
you don't.
I should just go straight to the new house.
Well, I don't think she wants you there
no,
either.
She doesn't. No, I don't think she does.
No, you can't. When she says, I don't want you involved in the move, she doesn't just mean don't come to London and poke your nose in there. She also means don't greet me at the new house. Standing behind the garden gate as if it's yours. chatted to the neighbours.
Picking up the keys first and yeah, I know what you mean. It's not my move, is it?
It's not your move. It's not
my
move.
It's not my house. It's not my move. It's not my house. Anyway, we kissed and made up.
Did you threaten to... If I'd been you, then I'd have followed through with the teary flouts. I'd have thrown myself into the pool. I'm drowning myself now. I've got stones in my pockets.
Do you think they'd have come out and rescued you?
No. That'd have been one way
of making
sure.
That's the danger, isn't it? That's the danger. Yeah. If you do something like that, it's like going off and hiding and hide and seek and nobody comes to find you.
6 weeks later, still there, starving.
Yeah, happened to me once.
So were they bossy with you on the holiday, though, the daughters?
They weren't too... Yeah, they're more bossy.
No, they'd have been better behaved because they had the friends.
Oh, that is so true. Yeah. That is so true. Absolutely. But there was a bit of a thing going on the holiday whereby we noticed that they were turning into me. And that is definitely starting to happen. You know, there was just little things like, you know, Sienna said, oh, yes, have you done any orange juice this morning? I like it. Fresh orange juice in the morning, you know. And that's something that I've been doing for years and she never did and she started doing. She started going swimming every day. It's just little things.
Just
little things
copycat.
Are happening. They are slowly but surely turning into me. What's now about, then. Is Phoebe turning into you?
Well, she's... I love the bones of her. I love her. But, sometimes I'm frightened of her.
Are you? I know
what
you mean.
Well, no, it's that sort of thing where you go, God, I love you so much, but you're quite bossy. It's that thing where I know that I don't know whether if she wants to come back and live with us now, I'd be very frightened.
Because you wouldn't want to put a foot wrong, would
Well,
you?
It's that thing where I'm allowed to be more slobby when she's not looking. It's that thing where she go, yeah, I don't seem to have gone to the gym this week.
Is that what she'd say?
She might say something like that.
Or she might say,
are you having another glass of wine? And I would say, it's only my second. And she'd go, big though. Second glass of wine.
So I think that's interesting.
Yeah, more exacting maybe. I don't know. But if I don't see her for a week, I feel very needy. And very sort of.
I know. You don't want to put your foot in it. You don't want to get it wrong. You want it to be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I have noticed that when they go, there is a little bit of relief, isn't there? Where you just think, as you say, oh, I don't have to make sure they're all having a good time.
Yeah.
I can just be horrible.
I can have a third large glass of wine.
Yeah. I can be bad tempered with Mike and, you know, put my dressing gown on. And
poor Mike.
Puts up with a lot,
very,
doesn't he?
Very, very good natured. That's all I'm going to say. I've done... what impresses me about you and Mike, and you may talk about this, but not at length, but the volunteering that you both do. And I've been doing some literary festivals recently for Inheritance, and they are... The backbone of the literary festivals are volunteers. They do go over and above the course of duty, sometimes to a ridiculous extent. But they are, you know, these things exist because of volunteers. Anyway, I was doing a literary festival. This is another farting thing, but worse. So it's a literary festival in Budley Salterton.
In Devon?
Is it Devon? Yeah,
very
it's quite
nice.
A long way in a church.
Oh, yeah.
And anyway, because it's not a theatre, there's not backstage lavatories. I'm using the loos that the audience are
using. I'm worried where this is going.
I had a pre-show poo, didn't I? I did, and there was only two cubicles. And as I came out, two women had come in. I thought, well, oh, God. One of them started heading for the cubicle I'd just vacated. And I said I'd give it five. And she gave me this look of absolute confusion. For starters, she'd come to see me, and I'd come out, and I'd obviously just done a poo in the loo, and she was
going...
Well,
you're allowed.
Oh, I have to. Mm. It's a bodily function. Mm. I couldn't go... I could have gone in a bush, but I thought, no, use a lavatory like a human being. And anyway, when I said, give it five, she didn't understand. She thought I was giving her marks out of 10 for her outfit.
No!
I think she'd listened to the podcast, Judith.
What did she say?
She went, what's wrong? And I said, no, I'm telling you not to go in that cubicle. Give it 5 minutes because it's a bit whiffy.
You had to spell it out.
I had to spell it out. I nearly had to say, listen, woman, I've just had a massive shit. If I were you, I'd walk round the block for five
and
come back when this is fragrant again.
Awkward.
It was awkward, Jude. Yeah, no.
So how did you, so tell me about the volunteers. What were they like?
They were very nice. Well, they're obviously very nice.
Yeah.
They were helping and all that. And you do that. Well, I've got to your house. I thought, well, I hope she's not doing that for my pudding because I can't eat 16 meringue nests. There's a big pile of meringue nests.
Huge. I know. I do this thing once a month where I do pudding for the Thursday Club. There's about 25, mostly old ladies. I think there's an old butcher that's there actually amongst them who's a bit flirtatious.
Yeah, I bet.
But otherwise, there's a lot of old ladies that sit on deck chairs all day and have a big lunch provided by the volunteers.
When they say deck chairs, what do you mean? Have they got to be outside?
Yeah, no, but they are literally deck chairs. But doesn't that say a lot? So when I get there delivering my pudding, because you know you have to get there at 12:15 with it all ready and everything, they're ready for their lunch, but they're all sitting on literally sort of deck chairs round. You know,
a community centre?
Yeah, it's a community centre. Yeah,
we need to raise some funds to get some proper seats.
Yeah, and it's just
for old people getting out of deck chair.
Well,
very, very difficult.
That's very true. But, you know, they're short of people, you know, they're short of customers and I suppose...
What, there are too many volunteers and not enough old people?
Exactly. Oh, there's a load of volunteers that are pretending they aren't old. But anyway, but it's kind of indicative, I think, of the fact that people are getting old in a different way, isn't it? Because, in fact, I know there are two or three women in the village and a lovely old bloke who, you know, I'm sure would like a sort of day chatting to people and a nice lunch and afternoon tea.
Well, why don't you invite them?
But no, they're invited and they're asked, but they're too independent. And I think, you see... Will we, in 10 years' time, 15 years' time, maybe 20 years' time, will we want to do that and accept it?
Depends on the pudding.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like-minded types. Obviously, I'm totally antisocial and you won't get me out. I'll be like a winkle. You won't be able to get me out of my shell when I'm an older woman.
Yeah, it's like a family.
But they come round your house, Judith. That's the only trouble.
I know, people pop in.
They pop in?
Yeah, they do pop in. I don't like that particularly.
Well, I know. I saw a strange woman come in. We drive. Oh, I thought, who's she?
Does anyone drop in?
No!
On you?
No. God in heaven, no. If they did, I'd be under the bed.
I know. Thomas, you don't know when they're going to go, do you? That's always a danger with surprise.
No. Well, well done for you.
Thank you
doing that. You're
very
good.
Much. Thank you very much.
See, it's difficult for me, though, to do, you know, because, like, your husband does the Samaritans. And do you think I could be a Samaritan?
Oh, he'd be terrible, Jenny.
I know.
Don't even think about it. But I mean, if you could have your time all over again... What would you have done? Would you have done a different job? Would you have done
No,
you'd have done the same thing, would you?
Oh, so much so. I've had such joy out of my career. Absolutely. I mean, last week, 2 weeks ago, when we had the Scummy Mummies in and they were talking about going off to do a gig in Leatherhead, I had such a kind of pelvic kind of pull of desire of wanting to do a gig.
Did you?
So badly, just being so jealous of these two sort of vibrant women in their 40s with young children who are sort of gigging round the country and having an absolute ball and dressing up and going out for a curry afterwards. And yeah, I just thought, oh God, you are having a wonderful life.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I have absolutely not a moment of regret.
But it's like that when you're on tour. I mean, your last show was fantastically successful.
Yes, it was, but I'm not doing
like
it now. And I have to write another one. I can't be bothered. It's too hard. Someone else should write it for me. Anyway, interestingly, you know, sometimes we get people who write in to us and say nice things. We haven't had any this week.
No, we haven't.
But some weeks ago, we got a recipe, an Asian slaw recipe.
Oh, I know.
Which Daisy took down for us and sent me on a... some form of messaging service. I can't remember if it was a text
whatever
or email,
that was.
Whatever
that was.
I got them.
Did you try it?
I did.
What was it called? The something slaw?
Asian slaw.
Asian slaw.
Judith,
oh, go on. Go on. What was it?
Well, it was Jeff's birthday.
Oh,
71.
Yeah.
It doesn't look it. And I had the family over. I didn't do anything exciting, Judith. I did sausages and I did chicken. I did my sticky summer chicken thighs.
Nice.
Because we all know how they feel.
Yeah.
And... I did some very good sausages.
Lovely.
Different flavours.
Lovely.
Yeah. And then I did just normal boiled small potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
Little ones.
Yeah.
Jersey potatoes.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I did a very big, I did a mountain of Asian slaw.
So very good, very good. Yeah. And was it a help yourself? Did you did people sort of, you know, yeah. go
well,
along with the plate?
Well, when
and...
my brother came, I kind of threw in the towel because he's a much better cook than me. I said, oh, God, Ben, thank God you're here. Finish off. But my Asian slaw went down a treat.
Did it?
Yes, it did.
Excellent.
But you know me, I have no food processor. I had to do all with my own hands
God,
and arms.
Did you really? How many cabbages?
Well, I did. Well, I bought three.
And
I...
Three cabbages? You didn't chop them all up. You didn't chop them all up.
Well, I did one, Judith. I did one large white cabbage. And by the end, because I don't wank anybody off anymore. Do you understand what I mean? I have no strength
Muscles
left.
Muscles have gone.
Muscle gone.
No,
no. None in the wrist, none in the arm. You know, it's once upon a time when I was wanking boys off.
Yeah, can I just say that the movements that you're doing with your right hand are quite troubling.
I had a big arm. I had a big sort of muscly wanking arm that's withered. Now, so the coleslaw, I was exhausted by it.
It was hard work, wasn't it?
Oh, hard work.
It was really hard work.
Cut, 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 cut. Oh, and grate the cabbage. Oh, God, I'm so bored now, so bored. And there was this mix, Asian mix to go in. Then I did something quite experimental and I added something. I became one of those really irritating people that adds a comment to a recipe online.
Did you? Try it with?
Try it with.
I'm just trying to work out what you put in.
Oh, what
bit of chilli? Bit of chilli?
No, Judith. Beyond. No, I put peanuts in.
And how did that go down?
Well, I forgot to ask if anybody at the table had an allergy, but fortunately, because I had girlfriends round. You know, I had a nephew with a girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
And she's only tiny.
Oh, so she might well have been peanut allergy.
Yeah, but fortunately, she hasn't got that one.
She's still alive.
She's still there.
Oh, that's good.
She lasted the lunch.
Oh, that's good.
But the exhaustion of the cabbage cutting was quite something.
Well, a white cabbage goes a long way. Three white cabbages.
Well, I bought three,
up, and that really is buckets of it.
Well, I was left with two white cabbages.
I bet you were.
I thought, I cannot face making coleslaw again ever in my life. By the time this goes out, of course, it'll be a bit dated. But, of course, we have a new icon, don't we?
You're talking about the woman with the
Brenda.
Brooch.
Yeah, Brenda.
Is she called Brenda? Is that
Brenda
her first
Hale.
Name? She was impressive, wasn't she?
Yeah, when she did that, when she reported that the proroguing
the Supreme
was illegal.
Court.
Supreme High Court. None of your High Court nonsense.
No, head of all of those judges.
Yeah, and you know, she didn't even have to wear a wig or any robes or anything. She just had a little black jacket on with a great big fuck off spider brooch. Great big diamante spider
I know,
like that.
I know, it's gorgeous.
And then
wasn't it?
By lunchtime, all the gifts had come through on my phone and my social media about all her brooches. And she has quite a large collection of brooches.
Does she?
Yes, a lot of flora and fauna.
Oh.
There's a big caterpillar one and there's a fox one and flowers and all sorts. Yeah.
That's her sort of style thing.
It's
and
totally
how lovely.
Her thing. Yeah.
Lovely.
It meant, and this is quite, there's a great link into our guest actually because she's flora and fauna.
Yep.
We've got Emma Mitchell coming in to talk to us about her.
Jenny.
Yes, I know. It's rare for me to do that.
Yeah.
But she's got this beautiful book.
Oh, and it's gorgeous, isn't it? Beautiful illustrations.
The Wild Remedy, which got a lovely little thing from Sue Perkins, you know, an affirmation. This is a beautiful, beautiful book, and I can't recommend it enough. Sue Perkins. Now, we like her, even though we're very jealous. And I know you've got to go to China. But you want to have a look at her Japan documentary.
Yeah, people say it's very good.
Yeah. Do you think that you were meant to go to Japan rather than... do you think that's what you meant to do?
I might have rushed into China quite.
Do you think...
I do rush in rather, but yes, I know what you mean. Might have enjoyed Japan more, mightn't I?
Well, there's...
Too late now, Jenny.
I want to talk to Emma about this religion that they have, which I think is very suitable for you and I. I've written it down in a book.
Is this the nature therapy thing?
It's Shintoism. I think it's called Shintoism. I'm just finding my notebook.
That's the biggest bag. How can you find anything in that bag, Jenny, for God's sake?
Shintoism.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so watch Sue's documentary.
Yes.
And it's basically about finding peace and a type of religion through nature. And the other thing she met were these women, and they were all about over 80, and they free dive for shellfish.
Really?
Yeah, and they can go, they can help, they're called the Amma, and they're very famous, and they wear wetsuits. In the old days, they didn't even wear wetsuits, and they free dive you know, feet and feet and feet, 40 feet down to get these shellfish, and they just hold their own breath. No scuba equipment, no nothing.
So why are they so aged? Is that just because it's something that they've been doing for a long time and they're the last people to do it?
No, it's a cultural thing. People start doing it when they're older.
Never.
And they keep doing it through their 80s up to sort of until they die, more or less.
Good heavens.
And then they all strip off and warm themselves up in front of a fire and slap each other's buttocks and all that. You would love it. It's so
need to
you.
Go there, don't I?
Yeah.
But also there's that, you know, all the kind of tree therapy. What do they call it? Nature therapy.
Forest bathing. That's what Sue did.
Yeah, I know. I fancy a bit of that.
Listen, we're just going to tell, just very quickly before Emma comes in, we're just going to tell our audience this, just so that they know. And I know it doesn't matter, but you and I, about 4 years ago, we devised a game show, didn't we? A panel show. We did. What was it called? I actually can't remember what it was called.
What was it called? Something about views, wasn't it? Areas of outstanding beauty.
Yeah, something like that. But it was basically a quiz about nature.
Yeah, it was.
And we offered it to everybody. We took it to everybody and we got rejection after rejection after rejection. Anyway, there's a new quiz about nature coming onto Radio 4. And it's not
galling,
by us.
Isn't it?
It's galling. Sue's got it. And I mean, if anybody else is going to get the jobs that we would like, we'll allow Sue Perkins because we love her,
just
actually.
It's annoying, though, isn't it?
So it's upsetting, Judith, but we have to get over it.
Do we have to get over it?
A little bit, we have to. We have to get over it for now because we've got a guest coming in, so we have to put a brave face on now. Well, we've got a guest that's come in. Judith, what's she done for us?
She's only gone and given us a tub of coleslaw each.
Just not
how thrilled.
Now, this we've is been so across London, this coleslaw.
Now, hold on. We've taken the Tupperware lids off.
I know, and
we're having
look at that. Lockable Tupperware as well.
She's given us not only a tub of coleslaw, but she's given us the tub, because we can't eat all this all in one go. Hold on.
Do you think? That's for you to take home.
Mmm. It's got cheese in it,
Emma,
as well. Bloody hell.
I want to
this is extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, it's got a little
this
bit
is proper this is posher than the Marks and Spencer's cheese coleslaw, which is a taste sensation.
Well, you see, that's what I was aiming for, because I remember you
crack
one
cabbage.
Of your crack cabbage, getting up in the night, it was so good. So I thought, right, I've never heard of this cheesy phenomenon. There's a coleslaw that is legend in Cambridgeshire. Right?
Okay.
The pub's now closed, but it gave you a pot of coleslaw as it would, in the same way as it would give you like a little pot of olives. And this coleslaw was
a taste of coleslaw.
Astonishing. Mm. And it had little bits of apple and it had fennel seeds. So I've put a few in.
Judith's good on fennel seeds.
This is amazing.
You like it? Judith knows
sort of made
her
it
coleslaw.
Up.
You made it up. Are we allowed to save it for later?
Of course, you don't have to stuff your face with it all that.
No, but I could. I mean, I could just go for it. And actually, the whole thing, that is absolutely delicious. I'm thrilled to bits.
And I'm very taken with these little round
Tupperware. Yes, the trouble is, Emma, you're not going to see these again.
Oh,
you realise that.
Those for you, because it's a little kind of, you know,
it's a proper present.
It's a thank you, Prezi, for inviting me on.
Oh, these are a very great pleasure, because we've got a copy of your book each as well. Which
lovely.
It's such a beautiful book, The Wild Remedy. Let's talk to you about the mixture of mental health and nature and how nature has helped you.
Yeah.
Let's start with the mental health stuff. What do you suffer from?
Okay, so I was first diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and quite severe. Mm. Back in 1992,
How old?
I was a nipper, so I was about 19, 20.
Yeah.
Really young.
Is this first time away from home, going to university? And
it wasn't. I'd already been there a couple of years, but something really tricky happened. Mm-hmm. I had to care for a family member. I had to be his carer while I was still doing my exams, and it was too much.
Did you manage to get through your exams?
It took me 5 years to do my degree, and it was only a three-year degree. So they were very kind, and they said, look, you're really, really ill. You're going to have to go and get treatment.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like that long ago, but actually the openness about mental health that is in place now really wasn't the case then. And it was really tricky.
What was your degree?
It was natural sciences.
Oh, that sounds like a nice one. What do you do in natural sciences? Just sounds to us like you just have a big nature table and you just pass acorns around.
There was quite a lot of that. I did a lot of peering at scorpions. Yeah. I went on a gorgeous field trip to Pembrokeshire and we peered at some really excellent crabs.
Yeah.
I was really into cells and DNA, so there's quite a lot of microscopic stuff, but also studying how a cell differentiates. So, you know, you get a fertilised embryo. How do you build a tadpole? How do you build a frog or a human from that?
I mean, the nature always starts with tadpoles, doesn't it? If you've got a six-year-old and you're trying to introduce them to kind of how stuff works, the tadpole is like one of the miracles that happens every day.
It is.
It's one of the maddest things ever.
It is.
Tadpoles and butterflies, caterpillars to butterflies, how the fuck?
Right, exactly. So I write... I'm one of the writers for The Guardian Country Diary, right? And the last piece I wrote was a few weeks ago. It was about getting some tadpoles from a pal, and I dug a tiny pond in our garden, and we put the tadpoles in, and they were wiggling around. And my daughters are about 11 and 13, and they were just astonished by it, even though they've got mobile phones and they've got tablets and Instagram and this and that. They just kept going, what are the tadpoles doing? And then, cut to a few weeks later, they grew legs, and they were like, bloody hell, that's amazing. And then the first little frog hopped out.
And they're mind-blowingly
tiny. Yeah. Like an exquisite little brooch, like Lady Hell's brooch, you know.
But a tiny one. Smaller.
Yeah. And that's what I wrote about, because that was what hooked me.
Nature is something we all take for granted, and it's something we have to, now and again, everyone needs to be stopped, and just everyone needs to go and look at something.
And marvel at it.
Yeah.
Just a bird flying. I was with my friend. I'm starting a podcast, and I recorded my first episode yesterday. I was in Streatham Common with my friend Lev, and we were just watching these magpies, and then we suddenly thought, they're flying, and that in itself
is especially with a magpie, because they're big.
Well, they are.
They're heavy.
And they have evolved to fly. I mean, I think there's always a human envy, isn't there? But yeah, I think marvelling at nature can really help you, because it sort of, it connects you with something outside politics or daily stresses or to-do lists. And that's what I do. I have to do it every day in order to keep myself well.
I so connected with this book and what you're saying.
Did you?
And I think as I've got older, it's become much more important to me. But I mean, what struck me about your book was, I mean, do you know, I think you got to the heart of it, because you said that nature gives you the solace that you sort of expected or might have anticipated in a church.
Yes.
And I think solace is such a good word, isn't it? It is that there is something about it which is, you know, healing, important, which makes you calmer,
But do you not
calmer,
think
brighter?
That
if
we got rid of religion and we went over to the more Japanese, I don't know whether you've been watching Sue Perkins' Japan thing, Shintoism, which I don't totally understand how big Shintoism is and what it actually involves, but it seems to be a religion of nature.
Yes.
And it involves forest bathing. Tell us about forest bathing, how we do it in this country.
I was so excited to see Sue Perkins do that because, well, in this country, it's still sort of more like it's more like articles in The Guardian. And but when you do go out for 15, but it's about 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes is when you start to actually get a biochemical effect in your body and in your brain as well. And the Japanese, that became a really big government promoted movement in Japan in the very early 80s. And that's, I think, one of the forest bathing trails is what Sue went on.
Yeah.
I go out, there's a little wood behind our cottage. I live in a tiny village in Cambridgeshire. It's a really young wood. It's only about 20 years old. So it's not like this ancient bit of forest that we were in on Streatham Common yesterday. But it doesn't really matter. If you're in a green space, even in your garden, within 15 minutes, your blood pressure drops. And all of this is backed up by the Japanese, who realised people were feeling better both if they had physical or mental illness, if they went into a forest. So they cottoned onto this decades ago, and then they dove into it with proper peer-reviewed academic research.
Right.
And so, yeah, these are the things they found out, right? Blood pressure drops, your pulse rate drops, and your stress hormone level drops as well. So there's something called cortisol that we release if you've got like awful deadlines, you're trying to get to the airport and you can't get there, and there's the panic kind of hormone. Awful feeling of being overwhelmed, and you've got lost control of you know, maybe the things you've got to do in a day, or someone's poorly that you know and you're having to visit them in hospital, and you can see them, they're coming to the end of their life, or something horrifically stressful is happening. You will be releasing cortisol all the time. Whereas if you go outside walking in a just take a brew into your garden. And I know you, I've been to your house. You've got that lovely little patch at the back.
She calls it a yard. Judith says, your yard. Because it's tiny, but there is green space. I have got three, they're thin trees, silver birches.
Oh, and beautiful.
They do give me great joy, actually. Just because there is green. I do look out of my window and I can see green. And I do understand. Judith has a proper garden, a beautiful garden.
Yes,
with
you see
trees.
Now, I'm
that.
Having a see, as you're describing this scene, what's going through my mind is a bit of a spoil, because I'm thinking, yeah, that's great and that's fine, and sometimes that does happen to me. Mm. On the other hand, often I walk into my garden and I think, well, that needs weeding.
Oh, no.
And that needs cutting back. And if I don't do that soon, that's going to fall down.
I know. That's the problem. If you've got a big garden and it's quite well maintained, it can actually become part of the to-do list rather than
housework
part
outside
of the solace. Whereas, so therefore, maybe a walk
in the park
from the garden. Or, you know, what I've done this year is I've let my garden go quite wild, because if you allow more wildlife to come to your garden, you actually get a more intense effect.
Rewild it, Judith, like the archers are doing.
Yes, as in / leave it alone.
Yeah, leave it. And then you get a meadow, and then you get all the butterflies and all the sort of creatures coming.
I've been counting them because I'm a bit of a geek. Yeah. I really tuned into my bees in the garden this year. I think I've had about 17 or 18 species. And that is partly from just letting it be a bit more wild and woolly.
There's another kind of bee, the leaf cutting bee.
Yes, I've had those. I have set up a leaf hotel and there's no more.
Hold on, wait a minute. What do you mean you've set up a bee hotel?
You can do it so easily.
It looks like a little hive, but it's got little holes drilled in it. Yeah. And I honestly didn't think that I would get anything. But although I'm quite in a rural place, so I put a post up in my in my flower bed, and it's got little wooden. It's got a little roof. It's got little wooden holes in it, right? And they are there. The leafcutter bees, I thought, this is a fiction. I didn't really believe that they'd come. But they cut little circles, as Jenny would say, from a rose leaf or all kinds of different bushes.
Yeah.
And they make a little cigar of leaves, and they stick it together with glue that they make from have spitty glue, and they make a sort of pesto, and they stick all the craft, incredible craftsmanship. They make these little cigars, and then they lay their eggs and make a little sort of cake of pollen.
And they put these in the holes that you've drilled in your bee hotel.
That's right.
What I like is that this isn't just for country types. You can go, as you said, you're in Streatham yesterday.
Yes.
And Streatham isn't particularly well known for its forest land, but it has a forest.
That common is beautiful. And apparently there's a little patch of woodland on Streatham Common, and we walk through it, that is hundreds of years old. It's like a little scrap of ancient wood. And it's dense and it's astonishing. And Lev has seen like woodpeckers and tree creepers and all kinds of wildlife.
Were there lots of used condoms on the floor?
Oh, heck. I don't know. I was looking for condoms.
Well, she's looking
but then
up.
I'm a simple soul.
Judith, she's looking up at the nature.
She's down
at
the used condoms, is she? She's got it. No. Why do forests, I mean, why are they more powerful than other things? Why do people always talk about tree bathing?
Is
that what you say?
Well, yeah. I think when you've got a wood or a collection of trees, you've usually got like an understory as well. So you'll have like bracken and you'll have all kinds of other plants underneath, so it's the density of both plants and animals in one place that has a real effect. So there are papers that show, and it's quite new research, that if the diversity of wildlife is higher in a particular green place, in your garden or in a wood, then the effect it has on your biochemistry and on your mood, anxiety and mood is more intense. So if there's more bees, more plants in one particular area, in a unit area, it has a more intense effect and better effect on our mental health.
I've never seen so many butterflies as this year. I mean, it's just a mad year for butterflies.
I agree. I think there seems to have been more. Have you seen them in your garden?
I think people are gradually catching on to the fact that even in a crappy yard, you can have some pots of stuff that will bring butterflies.
Oh, without doubt.
You know, you only need about three or four things and you will suddenly see a real change in what you get in your back garden. So I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
I bought a hollyhock, which gave me great joy throughout the summer because it just kept flowering and flowering, and it became quite tall, you know, so at least 5 foot high.
Yes.
Now, it's dead. It's a brown stick with all these brown lumps on it. And I know the lumps contain seeds.
They do.
I don't have soil in my yard, But will this dead hollyhock come back in its pot or what?
That's a good question. Probably, right?
It's the best £4 I've ever
probably spent. It'll probably come up back from the base, but those lumps, open the lumps, get those little discs of seeds out, just pop them in one or two of your other pots. Have you got a few pots?
I've got a few pots, but I don't want to strangulate. I can't put them in with the roses because I think they strangle the roses. But I have pots. The other thing I was thinking of doing, and is this all right? But I think it is. And I think other people are doing it right around where I live. And that is a sort of guerrilla gardening thing seeds out. And there are borders near bus stops, which are sort of got a bit of soil near and all that kind of thing. And I've got a big tree outside my house. It's got a little patch of soil. And I was thinking of just surreptitiously doing...
Oh, yes, you should.
Putting some of your seeds in there.
Yeah.
What you could do is do a little bit of kind of surreptitious travelling and a bit of rake, put a bit of compost in. Put your hollyhock seeds and you'll have a beautiful display around the tree.
Because at the Elephant and Castle, somebody's actually done this. And I was on a bus once and I literally... Well, I nearly shat myself because there was this display of hollyhocks that was in a community children's playground, and it was just surrounded by it was encircled by wild hollyhocks, and it's like it's concrete.
Yes.
So they grow through.
Yes, hollyhocks are amazing. They're very, very stubborn.
They're
and
real survivors.
Yes.
And I ask you a question.
Yeah.
How's your lupin doing?
My lupin died. I have to say, I painted it though.
Did
so, you know, I have it in, it's there in acrylics.
I see. So you sort of, you've commemorated it.
Yeah, I'm doing quite a lot. I mean, both Judith and I are painting, and one of our favourite things is
flowers.
The floral still life.
I've
done a few.
Amazing.
These are the book, The Wild Remedy, sorry, glasses on, glasses off, is illustrated inside. There's some black and white, some ink drawings, and some lovely, very delicate watercolour.
And some gorgeous photos as well. Did you do that, for instance, the Goldcrest?
That's watercolour of the Goldcrest,
They are so beautiful,
Emma. I did it after. I would go and walk, and I'd see, things in the garden or in wherever I was walking.
Oh,
and then
that's lovely.
And I've taken those photographs as well. What we try to do with the book is... But there's evidence to show that even if you're just looking at images of nature, it will have an effect on anxiety.
This is extraordinary.
I know. Again, it's the academic research is really fast moving on this because it's something we can really. Mm. It doesn't cost anything. You just get your wellies on or go outside. But if you look at something on your tablet or on your phone, that's why I try and make these beautiful photos for Instagram and Twitter.
Because not everyone can get out, can they?
No, exactly. So what I've tried to do here is if someone's really, really low, really down, and I've had many, many days like that when I just can't get off the settee, the depression's so bad, I've tried to take the reader there, but also to soothe them with the images. So, your anxiety can really drop if you're looking at a beautiful photo.
So part of your self-medicating, you make yourself feel better.
Mm.
There's the going outside for walks and that sort of thing. You have a dog, you also paint.
Yes.
But you also are a craft queen.
I did bring some show and tell.
Oh yes, please.
Yes,
you
please.
Are so in the club, Emma. Can I just say that you are becoming a senior member of the club.
I teach workshops.
Yeah. This is a silversmithing that you do.
It's not quite smithing. I've never learned how to smith. This is this silver clay, which is an astonishing thing. You start off with this lump of grey stuff that looks like blue tack that's having a really off day. And then you make a mould with silicone, two-part silicone moulding gum, and you press nature finds into it, so like a little cockle shell or whatever.
Oh, yes.
And you get the most beautiful imprints of plants and shells and things.
Mm.
And that's what I teach. But I brought an example of it for you to see.
Daisy will take a photograph of this and put it up.
And this is forget-me-nots from my garden, but when they've gone to seed.
Oh, isn't that pretty? It's a disc. It's a sort of about 2-inch flattened oval of forget-me-nots in a silver disc. Isn't that pretty, Judith? Look at that.
Emma, this is
so
fabulous.
See, she wants one.
I was going to bring you the whole bag of sort of demo pieces.
You wouldn't have got them all back. We've got coleslaw. We've just been raiding.
I'd love to do one of your courses. Are you still doing them?
I'd love to teach you. Yes. I actually offered to come and teach you in in here in the studio.
But, it wouldn't have been ideal. No. But look at this. You see, Judith, that two people in my life have tried to teach me to crochet. One is you.
I was a bit crap.
And the other's me.
Emma tried. And even she couldn't. I still haven't got it.
That's lovely.
It's like a muffler, isn't
it? It's like a cowl. Yeah, inspired by the wild fennel that grows in the fens.
Hold it up, Jenny. I'm holding it up, Judith.
Oh, isn't that lovely? Everything is so awful. Politics is so awful. God. Everyone's so depressed. Everyone can barely bear to look at the news or the television.
Yes.
And I do think that more and more craft and nature are the only things we have that can help.
Yes,
and
I agree.
I believe totally in both these things, and you're combining them together. And I genuinely believe that children, they should have a nature table.
Or just time spent outside. I mean, the forest schools are so effective at helping children who are in really difficult situations.
Are these the ones where they don't let them come inside?
Well, no, a forest school, it tends to be just like maybe an hour a week or half an hour a week.
Because there are a few schools around the world where basically all lessons are taught outside.
I would love to have gone to one of those. It does sound lovely.
You would have loved it.
Oh, I'd have adored it. I always loved it when lessons were outside.
On the other hand, those were my favourite days. I would never have gone to school. Listen, we have to wind this up. You've got to get a train back to Cambridgeshire. Judith's got to go back to Oxfordshire.
Oh, we've got to eat our coleslaw.
We've got... I've got burgers for tonight.
Perfect.
This is so perfect as an accompaniment. Because I thought I might have to go to the shops. I no longer have to go to the shops. It's just such a joy.
I might just have mine neat. Fantastic. Emma, thank you so much.
Eat it with a ham. She's a pig with a coleslaw. We've had a lovely day. Thank you very much indeed. We really do love the book. We love what you've talked about.
Thank you.
And we very much appreciate the coleslaw. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's been a great privilege to come on.
If you enjoy Older and Wider and would like to support the podcast, please like, subscribe and share.
Tell your friends about it. We need some more subscribers and reviews.
You find us on iTunes. Mind you, if you're not listening to this, you know... of fighting a losing battle.
No, it's not. Come on.
You can email the show at olderwiderpod@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, should you fancy that, at Jenny Eclair.
And me on at Grey Pride UK. I never know what my Twitter handle is. Is that what it's called, a Twitter handle?
Whenever you say Grey Pride, I always imagine he was a big, proud squirrel. Big, proud, grey squirrel.
Do you?
Sitting there proudly, yes.
Busying away.
Yeah, with a nut, a great nut.
Don't have to take it.